Welcome to Health Stealth Radio, where we move away from the mundane to gather insights from the shadows. From the shadows of enterprise and patient cybersecurity. Yes, we surely believe that traditional themes like endpoint software and zero trust are critical, but given massive advances in AI, remote and wearable device hacking, and data hostage negotiators, there's a much darker side to cybersecurity, and not everyone is quite willing to talk about it in public. Health Stealth Radio will thrive on these topics and encourage fireside spats to debate them. Here's your host, Frank Katita.
Good afternoon. We're broadcasting from Vive. This is Health Stealth Radio, an episode related to some of the most recent trends in the healthcare at the CIO or C-level. I have the pleasure of having Daniel D'Orazio, who is the CEO of Sage Growth Partners, who just came up with a fantastic research report on these current findings. So I'd like Dan to introduce himself, talk a little bit about the day in the life of what I do at Sage Growth. And I always ask my guests to tell me what you do to get away from everything and for the work-life balance.
Well, thank you for having me, Frank. It's a pleasure to be here. Dan D'Orazio with Sage Growth Partners. Our focus is to help our partners commercialize. So that means growth strategy and growth marketing. So we have the pleasure of working with many of the folks here at this event to try to figure out what their true value proposition is, the problems they solve, how they communicate, and how they make a difference on the patient, clinical, or admin, or financial side. And it's difficult to do that. So we're digging and digging. So that's where this research comes in to help us really understand the trends in the market.
So I want to get into the research more specifically, but your impressions when you got here, I mean, this is a very rapidly growing marketplace, a lot of seismic changes. When you have the research report and then you get here, how many of the things do you think were validated that you saw? And were there any sort of shockers? Well, we went this way on the research and here's something that we're sensing that's a little bit different.
I think the thing that I was unsurprised by but disappointed in is the fact that for healthcare executives in the hospital, 60% of the priority is still the EMR. And perhaps it's a system of record, but it's not a system of continuity, I don't think in any way. And here at Vive, we have tremendous organizations trying to influence and make this better. And the question becomes, if we're 15 years out from the High Tech Act and Obamacare and all the money that went into this, and 60% of the executives are still focused on the EMR, we have a problem with the technology. And I would say, at the same time, this is not necessarily just a technology problem. We have a broken delivery system that is not innovated much. We saw some of that innovation through COVID, but it's still a substandard industry in terms of how we operationalize care. And I say that humbly, I've never operated in healthcare. My wife's a clinician, she's a nurse, a nurse manager. We work with plenty of companies that work in healthcare, but it's very difficult to get continuity. And so when I saw 60% still focused on the EMR, not surprised, disappointed.
But you are finding, from what I've seen in research, that people are slowly migrating away from that. I can't get it all in one place.
That's true. And so I think there historically has been an EMR first, or EMR only, and now it's more EMR first. And if I can't get out of the EMR, I will look outside. I think we see that from a patient safety perspective in the report. That's places they'll start to look. I think also when you get to healthcare outside of the walls of the hospital, I think we still have so much work to do there to help our providers trust that the care outside is happening well, to trust the data that's coming in, to engage the patients. We've been in this space for 18 years, and we wrote a white paper in 2011 with St. Jude Medical, now part of Abbott, where you could put an implantable device in someone's chest, and if they slept next to a monitor at night, it would generate data to tell if you were asymptomatically in atrial fibrillation. That's remote patient monitoring. Mm-hmm. Medicare was paying more for that visit in 2011 than an in-office visit. It's still not the standard of care in terms of, well, how often it's being used. The COVID made that happen faster. So when I look at this, we've made a lot of progress, but I also look at value-based care and I say, I don't really know how far we've gone, right? And so we have all these solutions that are ready, but we haven't connected the dots between financial, clinical, consumer. And I think there's areas where we've gotten better. Certainly in telemedicine, no one used it, everyone used it. Now we're sort of at that 20%. I think we can't get lazy in our thinking to say, oh, telemedicine is here. Well, it might be here, but women and men and older adults use it differently. So we have to start to think about the nuance of these solutions, whether they're inpatient, outpatient, what's that coordination between the technology and the people in the process. A lot of the companies here don't want to be involved in the services side of this equation. I don't think you can make these systems work without it. So then you get to this conflict of, if I'm trying to grow a profitable business, I want certain margins, I get it, but I don't think you can just drop technology into healthcare without the services and the process wrapping around all of that. So I think there's a reality here at Vive that has set in for most companies that raised lots of money. And now the question is, oh, I have to be profitable. There's a new dawn.
We learned a lesson from the general technology market that you had to be a services company. I mean, Dell,
right?
IBM. I mean, they're all services companies now. I mean, Dell laptop, yeah, they have them, but
sure,
that's not a laptop company anymore. So I think it's true. What I think was an interesting finding, it's not shocking, but 65% of the survey respondents say that health of the populations is worse than pre-pandemic. Is that a legacy of the pandemic, that they're worse because people got sick and it's lingering, or is it fundamentally worse?
It's a great question. I think there's absolutely, whether it's correlation or causation to the pandemic, for sure. And we work in the hospice space. We work with one of the largest hospices in the country. And what happened in their population is that many of the folks that they would have served, they served earlier and died earlier. So for the last 2 or 3 years, their census was down. Now their census is coming up. And so what's happening in healthcare for 2 years, the patients that never got seen are now all of a sudden showing up. And so now you're seeing all this data about MLR and insurance companies and that sickness. And I think underlying all of this, there's a huge illness burden in the United States. And so now you see the GLP-1s, right? And for the folks that take the GLP-1s, you start to see real impact on weight and, diabetes and all these other. The question is, can that be sustained, right? Of course, that's helped a lot. But I think underlying this is that has been that issue. And COVID hit it. And now you can't hide that.
I was in that GLP session today, which was interesting, and it validates your point about being a services company, that you can't just be a pharmaceutical, but you've got to service the pharmaceuticals that you're delivering.
Yes, and so I think we've seen this in pharma, where they've gotten connected to the digital side.
Right.
And now I think the question is, there's been a ceiling almost set with the GLP-1s, and now everyone's going, well, I don't want that to be the first thing that everyone runs to. So what happens below that? You know, where is the coaching? Where is the nutrition? Where is the Noom? You know, all these other services. And I think there's going to have to be a collection of those that, again, need to be connected and coordinated. That's sort of the challenge I think we see in this report, is connected, coordinated. And that's both financially, clinically, administratively. It's incredibly hard to do and operationalize. So we have to get better in healthcare operationally. And then I think we'll see more of these improvements. But it's easy to say, very difficult to make happen.
So what are your respondents saying about these new streams of revenue that they have to generate in order to stay alive? I mean, you look at Mass General, look at the numbers, it's not pretty at all. I mean, it's the biggest institutions in the world of its kind. What are they looking for? What's the sort of the golden egg? Huh.
Wow, that's a great question. I think they all show they want to grow.
Yeah,
the numbers now, are here's the challenge with that. When healthcare grows, the rest of the economy grows. And that means dollars come out of other parts of the economy and into healthcare. And so if you look at the growth in healthcare, historically it's grown through people and not through efficiency and technology. And if you look at retail or finance or other industries, there's a much bigger curve of technology driving efficiency and productivity. We have not seen that in healthcare. And I'd argue that the fact that 60% of our effort is still focused on the EMR demonstrates that the technology has not done that. Now, we could debate whose fault that is, to speak. But it just hasn't delivered the impact. And so if healthcare grows, what does that mean? So it means more revenue, more cost. I think what it's going to do is push sites of care, right? And so hospitals went and bought practices, hospitals built ASCs. I don't think hospitals really have gotten outside of their walls. So when you talk about remote patient monitoring, it's a new medical and clinical and financial model. Mm-hmm. That has to be looked at and new. You don't have all the financial weight that you do to deliver that. But we know that if I treat a patient in the outpatient, I don't make as much as I did in the inpatient. I'm not sure hospitals have figured that out and really reckoned with that really difficult path. And of course, we also have to protect our hospitals because they're closing all over the country in rural America and they have negative operating margins. Well, they can't go out of business. They're almost like a public good.
Yeah.
Right? And so I just think as a country, we have a lot of difficult questions to answer about if healthcare grows, the rest of the economy shrinks, and where does that push and pull? To give you some perspective, we spend $1.4 trillion just on hospital spending last year. So what does $1.4 trillion represent? Walmart's revenue last year is about $630 billion. You could take two Walmarts and have just what we spent on healthcare in hospitals. So we're a $4.5 trillion economy, right? And so then you say, okay, well, United Healthcare, they might be at $350 billion. Well, you need five Uniteds to eat just what we spent on hospitals in the, and that's every single year. So you're buying five United Healthcare just on hospital spending, not the 4.5 trillion. So you add all that other stuff up. How do we tame that beast? And the more healthcare grows, the more the other parts of the economy shrink. And so it just gets pushed down on the providers, right? And there is no, I don't see the risk in the market. I've looked at this data, I've been in this almost 18 years. I feel like we're having the same conversations we had 18 years ago about value-based care and risk. It's still quality-based metrics. I don't think the providers are ready. I'm not sure the payers really want to hand over that risk. They know how to make money at a unit cost level. Providers have gotten into this business and gotten their tails kicked. So, I don't know what the answer is, but I know that unless these things start to connect more, we will not drive these costs down, and employers will continue to get pissed off. They have 150 million Americans. They can't stop this train. We have to connect the dots here. I think I get tired of the talk about the future of healthcare. We don't have permission for the future. We've got problems 15 years behind us that we haven't solved, 20 years behind us, right? Patient scheduling, not easy to do. We've got to fix yesterday's problems to make us even available to consider the future. And I think that's the mentality we have to have. Stop all the glitz and the glamour, solve yesterday.
Good luck. Good luck with that. I totally agree. It's just, it's interesting in looking at it. So you talk about value-based care and you go to the sessions here and people say that it value-based care in rural is an oxymoron. It's just not, there's no such thing because of time and distance, right, and things like that. So, I mean, you've got this whole swath of the United States that is not going to be able to give the value-based care that you
How about just care?
That as well.
Right. I mean, I think their access to care is so
incredible. I think I've been, as a patient, I've been spent a long time with telemedicine. So I to your point, I mean, telemedicine is like AI. It's like saying oxygen. I mean, it's telemedicine. That's what it is. It's like saying I'm going to do a report on the Walkman. It's just but the thing that I think is missing, which I'm curious and try to do informal service myself, is this whole concept of telepresence. So we could give them what the problem is, and my firsthand research as a 100-day patient tells me that you can give them the technology, but you can't give them the telepresence to communicate across it. So it's just like me sitting, just because I'm sitting here in front of a microphone and I'm qualified to be a podcaster, you can't have the next guy come up here and sitting here and say, well, this is a fantastic podcaster. They're just not, the doctors aren't built to that. They're not known as great communicators.
Sure. Yeah, I remember during the front end of the pandemic, we started to talk about website presence, not bedside presence.
And right.
I was with my nephew recently. I took him to the doctors because my sister couldn't. And they thought he was there for just a regular checkup. It was his wellness thing where there were some things we had to deal with. 12 minutes in, the doctor's head started to spin. And we hadn't really even gotten to the issue. She had to go see another patient, come back to him.
Right.
It's not her fault. But he had real issues that we needed to deal with. Yeah. So, can we use time and space for some of that? Yes. We still have a limited number of providers. I think the question becomes, how do we remove waste in the system? Like when we talk about telemedicine, it can't be good for the patient and bad for the provider. It can't be good for the provider and bad for the patient. I think the pandemic started to make that better for everyone. So we stopped healthcare at some level and we basically said, hey, regulatory and compliance and all that, we're going to have to relax them. And I'm not suggesting we do that going forward, but that's what got people together.
Sure.
There was a togetherness during that period of time. And when everyone's interests are constantly diverging, I don't know how we fix this. So we're going to have to look for pockets of convergence as opposed to, you know, divergence. And you know, I guess the hope has always been there about value-based care, but I don't believe providers are anywhere near ready to take risk.
No, I think it's like, it's a bad term, but I think it's sort of like Tourette's. You just have to say it over and over again because it's got to be there. I was interested to see as a marketing communications guy that how people were trying to get patients back to do elective surgery. And the success rate, or where they were allocating their budgets, I guess it was that actually social media went down. So I'm sort of compared to before the pandemic. So I'm sort of curious what sense you're getting for how people are going to get the high profit business back.
Yeah, it's a great question. And so I think surgery still remains the heartbeat of revenue for health systems. Now, we've worked with device companies who are wondering, if I have to put something in someone's chest and I have to do that in an ASC, I can't charge the same price as I would inside the walls. And so I think site neutrality is real. They try to fight it. And there's going to have to be a movement from inside to outside. So implantable cardiac devices, you can now do those treatment at ASCs. How comfortable are providers at doing that? But I think you'll start to see a lot of movement. I think ASCs, I have a friend who says, they're on the right side of care and value-based care clinically and financially, because the doctors don't have to wait all day. It's cleaner, the patient. That's sort of like retail surgery, right? We need more examples of that. I think also, I don't think that this whole retail medicine thing is just gonna magically happen. I think you're seeing Walgreens and everyone else starting to go.
We're seeing more implosions than we're seeing successes.
Oh yeah, right? It's really difficult. So I think there has to be a real focus on getting the sickest patients into care. I guess my fear is hospitals, if they don't start to really innovate, hospitals will start to be the safety net. There won't be safety net hospitals. I think hospitals will be the safety net, right? And so that's the key in terms of who's going to get their head around this and be strategic and think about outside the walls and bringing other supports in to help manage that.
You just said earlier that we got to get the waste out of healthcare. I want to tie that in. This could be controversial, but to what extent do you feel that artificial intelligence will bring waste into healthcare in terms of the investment?
It's interesting, at the conference here, I've had a number of people say, and I'm of the mindset that I think artificial intelligence can help.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And by the way, it's not new. I think it's new to all of the morons like me who aren't tech people.
Radiologists were right. Doing it years ago. Yeah.
So, ChatGPT, wow, this is amazing. I'm one of the morons that said, I guess this is more real than I thought. And so it's been democratized from that perspective. But I'm hearing a lot of people say, we were running at this and everyone was cheering. Now people are backing up. What's the governance? What's the risk? How do we know that even, you know, say someone said, if I have all my B providers populating that LLM, well, what does that mean when I give answers on B providers? So I think very quickly, as soon as it went up, it's starting to start to come back down in terms of what the reality is for this. And yes, everyone's running in this. And I think this is one of the great examples of what technology could do and could be, and take away that administrative game. It's been shown that some of these models communicate better than maybe some of our clinicians. Now, I don't think they're going to replace them, but I think we have a huge healthcare literacy problem, a clinical literacy problem. I put myself in that bucket. Doctors talk to me about drugs and this and that. I don't understand what they're saying. And if I don't understand what they're saying, how can I be part of my own care? So I think there's places where this can be really impactful, and I'd say let's slow down to speed up, because I think you're going to see a flood of money from an investment perspective, because there is just so much waste. But again, how many different points of life we have. One investor, Lisa Soonan, she's a great investor, she said in many ways we're atomizing healthcare, we're pulling it apart, right, by the, you know, the fundamental measure of the atom. And while we might be creating more access and more services, again, we don't bring convergence back. So I think that's going to be the question with AI and all these other solutions. Is this divergent or convergent?
I agree. The interesting thing, again, as a marketing communications guy, there's this whole thing. It used to be greenwashing. Now it's AI washing in terms of brochures and everything. Everybody's got to have it in there. And I think to your point, what I'm seeing in the interviews that I'm doing is that I wrote an article about this called The Joy of Missing Out. Instead of FOMO, you have JOMO. So when I talked to some of these CIOs, I said, "Has there ever been anything where you all just doing high five and saying we didn't do what Mass General does?"
That.
So you know, I'm looking at the JOMO effect right now,
yeah.
and it's tied in with another piece I wrote. I'm not the great journalist, but it was the skepticism maturity model. So you have a bunch of Marcus Welby type doctors that have 80% of their career is intuition, and the other 20% is technology. Then you have the young Turks that have no intuition because they haven't been around that long, and they're depending on technology. So trying to find that balance of the skepticism maturity model and CIOs and hospital administrators saying, I'm happy to have JOMO rather than FOMO.
I think that's phenomenal. And I'm going to use it. I'm going to cite you, because I think the other thing here is, it's very rare to have mature industries that are very immature industries that are saturated. So telemedicine went from completely immature to saturated, but still immature, because no one had telemedicine, everyone had telemedicine. Right. Overnight, immature and saturated. I think we've seen that with other parts of telemedicine, maybe virtual nursing and other. So it doesn't go through the normal curve of industry adoption and disillusion and so everything went on a complete hockey stick, saturation, but still wildly immature.
Right.
So that's tricky. I think that's what we're starting to see, the front end of starting to appreciate what that means or how we work.
Right, everybody walking around with a nuclear weapon in their hand.
Right.
Not knowing
what to do with it.
Not knowing how to use it.
Yeah.
So I could go on for hours, but I'm just sort of curious, in terms of your respondents, were there any major counterintuitives that we thought this and then this?
I think the fact that we still have things like consumerism and stuff at the bottom, consumerism and patient safety are at the bottom, and we've got other things at the top. And I go, can we have a profitable technology-driven system if consumers and patient safety are at the bottom?
Do you think it's because a lot of people don't know what consumerism in healthcare is?
I don't think we can. I don't think we have consumerism. We might get consumer-ish,
yes,
type of behavior. Yeah. But I think the fundamental question is, if safety is not the first concern, how do you have the right healthcare system? So I think you have to have safety and profitability, safety and quality, safety and compliance, for instance, right? So these things have to be connected again. And if someone is pursuing revenue and taking their eye off safety, not going to work. But the pressure on health systems to operate is just absurd. 30-40% of hospitals, negative operating margins. So the amount of money in the system grows, who gets it, who controls it, how it works, continues to shift, but I don't think in a value-based care way. It just sort of goes down or might move site of service. So I've seen some of our own research that says a lot of these health systems are not worried about retail medicine because of their sense of patient loyalty. And I say, okay, interesting, but younger folks don't have patient loyalty. You know, there's a generation, this is the whole thing about telemedicine. You can't treat it as one block of patients. You have older adults, women, sure, men, right? And so you have to stratify. I think that thinking has not come to healthcare. We talk about that from a risk stratified population. I don't know that we've done enough of that and think about our sort of portfolio of patients. But again, I don't want hospitals to become the safety net.
Right.
But clearly they have to also evolve.
I have two more questions if you have the time. The first one is, governance was never really cool. You know, whenever I heard the word, whether it was on a board or something, it was like my eyes started glazing over. But now governance is cool. And it's got to be there. We got AI, we've got cybersecurity, and now everybody is embracing governance. Like, how are we going to control this beast, both from the AI point of view, especially, you know, as it gets closer to clinical decision support, and then cybersecurity as it gets close to everything, the consumer and the internal workings. Are you seeing that the governance is
that's
cooler
what
than it used to be?
Yeah. Well, I think
I don't want to say cool. I mean, it's
right,
not going to be cool.
That's what I'm starting to hear here about AI, that everyone was excited and running towards it. Now they're starting to back up. Well, what is this, right? I think people are starting to ask the governance question. and what this means if something happens, right? So I think that's important. I also think governance has a new day in all of the investor-backed companies, yeah. Right? It was sort of rah-rah, everything's up and to the right. And of course, that's not the case anymore. And I think people are looking hard at the businesses they've invested in and say, are these fundamentally well-run businesses? I've heard a lot since JP Morgan about break-even's no good anymore. You have to be profitable. Well, look, the business I run, and I know I'm not investor-backed, but right. It's never been my thing. And I understand you have to invest eventually to get profitable, but I think the whole mindset has changed. And so that means you have to solve a real problem with a real use case and know the health economics and be in the workflow to really start to make a difference. And if those things don't connect, you're not going to have a solid business. So I think governance goes from AI to compliance to even the investors and how they're guiding and stewarding their companies.
The investors have been brought in heavily on the governance part now at the boardroom table. Last thing, and I'm no visionary, but a couple of years ago I started launching hospital at home shows. I sit in every session, no matter what it is, the Jetson session or cybersecurity session, hospital at home, over and over again. What do your survey result people?
We've done a lot of work in that space. I think we're still having to get the clinicians comfortable with, I mean, it's a DRG that would have been seen in the hospital that is now seen at the home. I mean, this is not activities of daily living care at the home, right?
No, it's high acuity.
It's high acuity. And so I think we're going to have to ensure that the clinicians feel that the care and the reach is comfortable, number one. Again, we can't have hospital home good for the patient and bad for the doctor, just like telemedicine can be good for the patient. But, and so I think that's the barrier that's going to have to be crossed. And I think we're going to see this grow minutely, right? Because again, we don't operate well in healthcare. So now you have to have a whole infrastructure.
Right. The scalability is a challenge. I mean, and that's why the reimbursement side is going to be challenging, because the insurance companies say you've got how many people? 35 people in this program?
Yeah, it's not even a drop.
How am I going to make money? How am I going to make money on this?
Yeah. So I think everyone wants to run to the home. We saw that, and we work with a bunch of companies that are in the home health space and fully capitated and pay claims. Sure. Very hard business to have to pay claims, to have to delegate, to have to organize DME and infusion and home health. Healthcare's got a massive operational challenge. I think we need more of that thinking involved to make some of these things
work. No doubt, and then you add the equity part on top of that, and the hospital at home equity is just a massive challenge from a technological point of view. I don't want to burn any more of your time. This has been fantastic. Let's look at this Act One, and that we could catch up as you start taking the survey to the marketplace. But in the meantime, appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for joining us today in the shadows for this episode of Health Stealth Radio with Frank Katita. If you like the program, please be sure to share your comments on our social media sites, or feel free to contact us with suggestions for new and stealthy show themes. We look forward to welcoming you again for our next broadcast. In the meantime, stay safe out there.